5:03 to go. Someone has run on the field. Some guy with a bra. And now he's not being chased. He's running down the middle of the 40. Arms in the air and a victory salute. He's pulling down his pants. Put up your pants, my man. Pull up those pants. He's being chased to the 30. He breaks a tackle from a security guard. The 20, down the middle, the 10, the 5. He slides at the 1, and they converge on him at the goal line. Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
So that was the real highlight from Super Bowl 55, courtesy of Westwood One and Kevin Harlan. An underwhelming game in and of itself. Welcome in. It is the Doug Russell Podcast. The Super Bowl exposed a couple of things. It exposed the greatness of Tom Brady in big games. It exposed how hard it is to repeat. It exposed how officiating can impact at least the flow of the game. I'm not saying that the officiating would have changed the outcome of the game, but it certainly did impact the flow of the game. And that at least to a certain extent, especially in these COVID times, home cooking matters. If you were living under a rock, and in case you missed it.
Scrimmage the KC8. Here's the snap out of the gun. Play action fake. Pass to Gronkowski. He's going to score a touchdown. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Holy guacamole. He breaks the record. He's got his 23rd touchdown in the postseason from Tom Brady.
Leonard Fournette. Here's the setback. The line of scrimmage is the 17-yard line of Kansas City. Here's the snap. Play action fake. Brady looking. Throws toward the end zone. Caught ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Gronkowski.
Rob Gronkowski's got two today. Buccaneers line up at the 1-yard line. 10 seconds on the clock. Brady takes the snap. Play action fake. Looks toward the right. Throws toward the caught ball. Is it a touchdown? Yes.
Antonio Brown
dives low to make this catch, and the Bucs add 7. It's 20-6.
Here's the snap. Run the ball to the right. Got a blonde boy to the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Leonard Fournette takes it to the house, and the Bucs lead 27-9. Here's final snap of the ball game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, underdogs at home. For the first time in NFL history, hosting a Super Bowl on our home field. The defense does its job. Great job, defense. And Tom Brady just does his thing. How about that? His 10th Super Bowl. Golly, is this his 6th ring? 7th ring?
7th.
7th ring.
That's hard to believe.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers 31, Chiefs 9. 1 second. There it is. 0-0-0. Bucs win. The Super Bowl 55.
Gene Deckerhoff on the call on WFUS Radio in Tampa, St. Pete. Going inside some of the numbers, Tom Brady was efficient. He wasn't spectacular, but he was very, very efficient. 21 of 29, 201 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, a quarterback rating of 125.8. He was only sacked once, and it was only for 6 yards. That was an incredible performance by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line and their defensive line as well. We'll get to Patrick Mahomes in a minute. The Buccaneers were able to run the ball effectively. My X factor going into the game was Leonard Fournette. Now, I don't think that Fournette is the player who, by and large, won the game for the Buccaneers. I think it was mostly a team effort, and Tom Brady wound up with his 5th Super Bowl MVP award. But Leonard Fournette, 16 carries for 89 yards, really allowed them to control the clock and allowed them to set the pace. Ronald Jones, who Packers fans will remember very well from their early season meeting when he ran up and down the field against Green Bay, 12 carries for 61 yards. So both Fournette and Jones averaging more than 5 yards per carry. That will move the chains. That is winning football. As far as Tom Brady's best receiver, or at least his favorite receiver, no surprise, Rob Gronkowski, 6 receptions for 67 yards, 2 touchdowns. But Antonio Brown also, in this game, caught 5 balls. Now, they were only for 22 yards, but he did catch a touchdown as well. That's important because when we think of Tom Brady, we think of the players that he recruited to come with him to Tampa Bay. We'll get to more of that in just a moment. But everything was efficient, even Leonard Fournette, 4 receptions out of the backfield for 46 yards. You look at the quote-unquote 2 best receivers that the Buccaneers held over from 2019 to 2020, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, they combined for 3 catches, Godwin with 2 and Evans with 1. These are talented guys. These are really good receivers, and they were non-factors, really, in this Super Bowl game. Now, as for Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes, he was harassed all night and threw two interceptions, 26 of 49, 270 yards, a quarterback rating of 52.3. Didn't get into the end zone, which doesn't happen with Patrick Mahomes. He was, again, just battered all night long by Todd Bowles' defense, by the stunts that Todd Bowles was throwing at the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line. And the Chiefs were a little bit banged up on their offensive line as well. But again, you're talking about a blowout win in the Super Bowl where the most explosive team on offense in the NFL couldn't get into the end zone. Mahomes sacked three times for 27 yards as well. Travis Kelce was really the only guy that got off at all, catching 10 balls. He was targeted 15 times, but he caught 10 balls for 133 yards. Everybody else was kept completely in check. But for the fifth time in his illustrious career, Tom Brady is your NFL MVP. Here's Brady on Monday morning.
Offensively, we made some great plays when we needed to, but it was the ultimate team effort, ultimate team as B.A. said, it's an amazing team, amazing group of guys, and just I'm very blessed to be a part of it. I said last night, you know, every game, every year is different. You know, this year has been so, it's been incredible for me. It's just been incredible. It's great. That's where I rank it. It's great. It's been a great year. There's so many great plays by great players on our team at the biggest moments. And then again, last night was pretty spectacular. Being in the league for a long time, you know, the rarely does the season ever just go, you know, smooth sailing. So every team deals with adversities, has to overcome different obstacles over the course of the year. You know, sometimes you start slow. Sometimes we had a middle stretch where we didn't play our best. We played some really good football teams. And then sometimes you struggle a little late and you got to get it going. But this team found a way when it mattered most.
This was a brilliant defensive performance and game plan once again from defensive coordinator Todd Bowles. Remember week 12? This was the beginning, the first meeting between the Buccaneers and the Chiefs. It was the beginning of the turnaround for Tampa Bay. This after Tyreek Hill went off for 269 receiving yards and three touchdowns. On Sunday, in the rematch, in the Super Bowl, in the one that will count forever, Todd Bowles and his defense completely took Patrick Mahomes out of his rhythm, pressured him heavily. And again, I talked about the banged-up offensive line on the part of the Kansas City Chiefs. Remember, they were without starting offensive tackles Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz. Patrick Mahomes continuously was throwing off balance. Now, one of those should have been a touchdown. It hit his receiver in the face mask. But if you look at the still pictures of Patrick Mahomes trying to do everything that he could to get his team and will his team into the end zone, he is parallel to the ground, throwing an absolute dime into the end zone. He was not helped by his receivers by any stretch of the imagination, especially when one hits you in the face mask. You have to catch those balls, especially in big play moments. But he was sacked three times, intercepted twice, and again, held out of the end zone. So let's talk not about Patrick Mahomes, as this week he's going to be in Green Bay getting his turf toe worked on. That's not the reason that the Kansas City Chiefs lost that game, but Patrick Mahomes is going to remember this one for his entire life. And he said that, you know, you can learn more things from a loss than you can from a win, and I believe that. And this shouldn't diminish his greatness. I think Patrick Mahomes, he's certainly going to be back in the Super Bowl. He's going to win MVPs if he continues on the trajectory that he's on. And granted, he's very early in his NFL career. He's probably going to wind up in the Hall of Fame. But we're a long way from there, from where we sit today. But there's one guy who's already in. I mean, not officially. You have to wait 5 years. But the bust is already carved. But he keeps writing new chapters of this incredible resume that no one in the NFL can touch. So let's talk about Tom Brady for a minute. I know that so many of you are sick of hearing about him. I get it. There are so many around the country, talking heads like me and fans like you, that are trying to denigrate his accomplishments. I'm not one that is, but there are those that do exist that are trying to. I will preface this by saying I'm not a Tom Brady fan per se, but I recognize his accomplishments and are in awe of them. Does that mean I am a fan? Does that mean that I root for him? Not necessarily. I mean, I think that I root for greatness. I rooted for Tiger Woods in the Masters when he was, you know, making his comeback in 2019 because it was good for sports as a whole. So in that sense, do I root for Tom Brady? I mean, I guess, but I certainly wasn't rooting for him in the NFC Championship game. It wasn't my fondest desire to have him beat Aaron Rodgers and go on to another Super Bowl for the sake of his legacy. I don't think that he needs that for his legacy, but you can't help but be in awe of his accomplishments. And there are those that are trying to say that, you know, he's a system quarterback, or there was one, I forgot who it was. Was it? I forget who it was, but it was one of the main national talking heads that actually said that Tom Brady was the NFL's version of Robert Horry. Just lucky to be around great teams and lucky to be in a position to win seven rings, which is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard any respected journalist or any respected opinion journalist ever say. That's stupid, with a capital S and a capital PID. Stupid. The dumbest thing that anyone could possibly say. But a fan? I'm not really a fan. Not a Michigan fan, not a Patriots fan, not a Buccaneers fan. I've never rooted for any team that he has ever played for. But you can't deny his accomplishments. At age 43, he changed teams and led them to a Super Bowl win. All new system, all new coaches, almost all new players. Going from New England to Tampa Bay. But here are the facts. Let's just look at some statistics. Last year, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were the most penalized team in the NFL. Dead last. 32 out of 32. This year, they were tied for 11th. Now, is that, you know, one of the best in the NFL? No, but it's significant. Tom Brady came in, demanded discipline from his team, and he got it. It's not what I'm saying. That's what his teammates are saying. That's what his coaches are saying. Not many players can carry that weight. Tom Brady does. Also, we talked about the players that he recruited a couple of minutes ago. Three players that Tom Brady personally recruited to join him in Tampa. Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Brown, Leonard Fournette. Is it coincidence that all of them scored touchdowns this year in the Super Bowl, with Rob Gronkowski catching two touchdown passes in the first half? Look at his overall statistics this year. Again, at the age of 43, 40 touchdown passes. At the age of 43, 12 interceptions, quarterback rating of 102.2. Did I mention that he is 43 years old? Now, you don't have to bow down to Tom Brady. You don't have to shower him with rose petals. You don't have to retire his number league-wide, as has been ridiculously suggested. Full stop with that. Ridiculous. But Tom Brady is the best, the greatest quarterback, the greatest winner, the most durable athlete the NFL has ever seen, period. Period. Tom Brady was drafted in the year 2000. Think of it this way. Tom Brady was in the same NFL draft as Ron Dayne. He was in the same NFL draft as LeVar Arrington, Brian Urlacher, Mark Bulger. Drafted, same draft as Tom Brady. If you want to put it in Packers terms, he was drafted in the same NFL draft as Bubba Franks, Chad Clifton, Kabir Bajabiamila, and Mark Tauscher. Reggie White was still playing in the NFL when Tom Brady began his NFL career. Dorsey Levins and Leroy Butler were still on the Packers when Tom Brady began his NFL career. Bill Clinton was president when Tom Brady began his NFL career. 9/11 was still a year away from happening. No one had ever heard of a hanging Chad when Tom Brady began his NFL career. That longevity has to be respected. And to continue to lead and to win has to be admired, even if you're sick to death of the guy. Tom Brady, for all of the, well, I'm so sick of Tom. Fine, you can be sick of Tom Brady. That's fine. Everybody's entitled to root for whomever they want to root for. But to denigrate what he has accomplished is insulting to your own intelligence because you sound stupid when you say it. To suggest that he is the NFL's version of Robert Horry is the dumbest hot take of hot takes that maybe sports has ever seen. And I don't take that lightly because there have been some bad ones. There have been some stupid ones. There have been ones that make you shake your head. There have been some that have infuriated you. But that's right now, as I sit, the dumbest take of all hot takes of all time. All right, one other quick hitter before we get out of here. The Packers have named Joe Barry their new defensive coordinator. Barry knows Matt LaFleur from their days with the Rams. Joe Barry is also not Matt LaFleur's first choice to replace the non-renewed Mike Pettine. Jim Leonard was, but Jim Leonard has chosen to stay at Wisconsin. Monday on 97.3 The Game, the Badgers beat writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Jeff Patricus, was asked if it were true. Did Jim Leonard actually take a pass on the NFL and the Green Bay Packers?
He was, in talking to our guy Tom Silverstein, who was working on the story and covers the Packers, we kind of communicated throughout the process, and from what Tom could glean, that was LaFleur's first choice. He thought very highly of Jim. Everybody knows the job he's done at Wisconsin, knows his history in the league as a player, a very smart, you know, defensive signal caller when he was a player. So, yeah, and what we were told down here in Madison was that people who knew Jim said from the start of the process that they would be more surprised to see him leave than turn it down for a number of reasons. And that's the reasons they cited: family, where he is in his career here, what he likes doing. Turned out to be exactly why he said thanks, but no thanks.
Jeff Patricus was also asked what the future might hold for Jim Leonard.
Well, this is my personal opinion, okay? I'm not speaking for anybody at UW, but I will preface that by saying this. The powers that be know Jim Leonard very well. They know what he can do. They know what they think he can do running his own program. I personally think at some point, if he wants it, he's going to be the head coach at Wisconsin somewhere down the road. He's only 38 years old. I understand why people think that way, because it's the NFL. It's a chance to probably make more money. He made about $1.2 million here last year, which for assistant coaches is really good coin. And trust me, he didn't burn his money the money that he earned in the NFL. he's not throwing money left and right like you and I would be going out. So, he consulted his wife and thought about his family when he accepted the job to go from position coach to defensive coordinator. He wanted to say, look, it's going to be this much more responsibility, time away, et cetera, et cetera. So it's no surprise that he weighed those factors. Now, I talked to one guy who said Jim's very active in the community, working the local parish when they have like football things to teach football kids. He says you would be shocked to see how much time he spends on his own just working with like grade school kids, teaching them. He loves to teach the game to kids. You're not going to be teaching the game so much at the next level. But to me, it still comes down to family. And like I said, he knows what his career could eventually lead to if that's what he wants.
I like that. I like the loyalty to the Badgers program. I like that he's likely the head coach in waiting. I like the fact that Wisconsin gets Wisconsin coaches. Now, if they were incompetent coaches, I wouldn't want them, right? But when you stay in the family, whether it's a Jim Leonard, whether it's a Paul Christ, whether it's a Greg Gard, You know these guys are in it for the long haul. You know that these guys, obviously I know blood is red, but stay with me here. When you cut them open, they bleed Wisconsin red, right? It's like when you cut Jim Harbaugh, and this is one of the reasons that I think Jim Harbaugh is still at Michigan. You cut him open and he bleeds Michigan blue. There's something to that, because when you've got a coach that's always putting his own name out there, and that's how speculation starts about coaches hopscotching from one program to another program to another program to another program. It's because they're putting their own name out there. That's Tom Crean when he was the coach at Marquette. He couldn't wait to leave Marquette. He couldn't wait to get to a blue blood program. I mean, when he got to Indiana, I mean, he said it in his press conference. Well, it's Indiana. He didn't win at Indiana. He got fired at Indiana, and that's how he wound up at Georgia. And I think that Tom Crean has mellowed over the years. But the way that he left that program was basically a post-it note and a peace out. Brett Bielema at Wisconsin. Brett Bielema wasn't, quote-unquote, in the Wisconsin family. He was brought in from the outside. He went to Iowa. Does that mean that he was a bad coach? No. Tom Crean wasn't a bad coach. Tom Crean led the Marquette Golden Eagles to the Final Four. He changed the game at Marquette. Brett Bielema won Big Ten championships at Wisconsin. But when he left Wisconsin, it's not like you cut him open and he was bleeding Wisconsin red. I don't know if you cut him open and he's bleeding Illinois orange right now. But if Iowa, when Kirk Ferentz retires, if they come knocking on Brett Bielema's door, well, he went to Iowa. He might, quote unquote, come home. But when these guys hopscotch from job to job to job and they're not in the family, they didn't grow up in the program, that's the risk that you run. That's why I like guys. Again, Paul Christ, Greg Gard, even Bo Ryan. Bo Ryan grew up in Pennsylvania, but Bo Ryan, you still never got the feeling that he was searching for that next job because he had been in Wisconsin for so long. And that wasn't the case with Brett Bielema, wasn't the case with Tom Crean. They didn't grow up in those programs. Gary Anderson, another example. He couldn't wait to get out of Madison, and quite frankly, the feeling was mutual. So if Jim Leonard is the next head coach at Wisconsin, okay. If he's been promised coach in waiting for when Paul Christ retires, okay. I know there were a lot of Packers fans that were disappointed, but go find somebody. Well, they got. They did. They went out and found Joe Barry. But go find somebody else's coach. He was sniffing around Madison. We need a new defensive coordinator. Great. Leave the one that, you know, there's a ton of overlap, right, between Packers and Badgers. Who would I rather see win, the Packers or the Badgers? Yeah, but yes, I would rather see them both win, yes. Do I put one over the other? I don't. I don't think the Packers are more important than the Badgers. I don't think the Badgers are more important than the Packers. They're on equal playing fields in my mind, in my heart of fandom. So if he stays at Wisconsin and he becomes the heir apparent, I think that's a great thing for the program, because he's not going to be one of those guys like a Tom Crean, like a Brett Bielema, like a Gary Anderson that's trying to sniff around for their next job. All right, that's it for today. We will see you next time right here on the Doug Russell Podcast. We close with some of the most memorable plays as we wrap up this 2020 football season. Some of the most memorable plays in past Super Bowl history. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
Bradshaw is deep, and they're firing downfield. Swan going after covered, and it's double. Swan catches another circus catch inside the Dallas 45-yard line. Gets up and goes inside the 40, down to the 37-yard line. And a defensive player right on his back. Here's Mark Washington. The ball bounced into the air. Swan lying on his back. Cut the ball in circus fashion. Got up and ran again. Was down inside the 40, down to the 38-yard line. A sensational catch for the Steelers. Lynn Swan.
Let's see who'll win this battle. Riggins. He's going to go all the way.
Reich on fourth down to throw. Pressure sacked by Jeff Kerr. And fumble. And Leon left. Picks it out of the 40. Oh, look out. Here he goes. Here comes the pick to the 20.
Go, Leon.
Oh, Leon has it knocked out of his hand. It's a fumble. It's a fumble. He had it knocked out of his hand. He was hot-dogging and held it out at the two-yard line, and from behind the Bills came and knocked it out of his hand.
It's not going to be a touchdown.
No, it's not. Don Beebe caught him from behind.
Final play of the game in regulation. It is caught by Dyson. Can he get in? No, he cannot. Mike Jones made.
Michael. And the Rams have won the Super Bowl.
Pressure from Thomas off the edge. Eli Manning stays on his feet. Airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
What a slot left. Washington outside left. Roethlisberger. Pass time. Throws to the back of the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Holmes.
Play clock at five.
Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
19.
Toss to White. He's in. Patriots win the Super Bowl. Brady has his fifth.